quote it from one of the boys. There's nothing fake or forced in McGarriel's writing. He even pulls off the trick of relying on a 12-year-old narrator without pandering to sentimentality or wise child syndrome. Those are some of the pitfalls McGarriel avoids. What he achieves is a novel that makes readers feel what it would be like to live on high alert all the time, to be at the mercy of a father's addictions, crackpot whims, and surges of violence. He also makes us feel what it would be like to still love such a father. The subject of One of the Boys is archetypal, but McGarriel's novel depicts it with the power of stark revelation. We cannot turn away.
Lorraine Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed One of the Boys, the debut novel by Daniel McGarriel. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, my guest will be artist and writer Emile Ferris, who has published an extraordinary graphic novel called My Favorite Thing is Monsters. It's about a girl who's obsessed with monster comics and movies and thinks of herself as a werewolf. A subplot is about her upstairs neighbor, who's a Holocaust survivor. Ferris started the book after she was infected by a mosquito bite that left her legs paralyzed and her hands barely able to move. She's recovered some movement and strength and retaught herself to draw. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Mood Zaidi, and Thea Chaloner. I'm Terry Gross.
NPR comes from NPR member stations and from ADT Security, helping to protect families and homes for over 140 years. Learn more at ADT.com. And from Newman's Own Foundation, working to nourish the common good by donating all profits from Newman's Own food products to charitable organizations that seek to make the world a better place. More information is available at newmansownfoundation.org.
When a Stanford professor came up with a way to make doing your taxes painless, he thought everyone would like the plan, but lawmakers wouldn't listen, so he hired a lobbyist.
They gave me a deal because they thought it would be kind of fun to work for this crazed professor, so I paid $35,000, I believe.
I'm Ari Shapiro, one man trying to make taxes enjoyable, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered begins at 4 on KTOO.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, Running 2017, Alaska Public Media's Candidate Forum, talks with contestants in Anchorage Assembly races from Portage to Peters Creek. Gavel Alaska is back at 10. It's a great way to keep up with state politics tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, March 29th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll learn about integrated preschool opportunities. Colette Costa will be here to highlight a selection of films by the late Lyle Hebert. And Chris Giannotti will be here to talk about a Boy Scout food drive. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. And weather today, rest of tonight, numerous rain showers and snow showers, little or no snow accumulation, lows in the mid-30s, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Trump administration is moving forward with its energy plan in hopes of creating jobs and boosting U.S. energy independence. President Trump signed an executive order Tuesday which lifts regulations on coal. It also lifts restrictions on the production of oil, natural gas, and shale energy.
My action today is the latest in a series of steps to create American jobs and to grow American wealth. We're ending the theft of American prosperity and rebuilding our beloved country. We approved the permit to finally build the Keystone XL pipeline and cleared the way to completion of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Thousands and thousands of jobs.
Environmentalists and a group of Democratic senators, including from Western states, have raised concerns about the order, saying it reverses initiatives to combat climate change. Meanwhile, in the tribal fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline, the leader of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe says the tribe's committed to fighting the project after receiving word this week that oil is present in the pipeline underwater in North Dakota. In a statement Tuesday, Chairman Dave Archambault reiterated that the tribe will not stop its legal battle. On Tuesday, two Los Angeles City Council members introduced a motion to start a conversation about the city divesting funds from Wells Fargo Bank due to its financial ties to the Dakota Access Pipeline. City Council member Mitch O'Farrell says he wants to send a message to financial institutions that Los Angeles is a national leader on the environment. The city holds millions of dollars with the bank. The motion will go before the Budget and Finance Committee. Last year, the City Council approved a resolution opposing construction of the pipeline. Many families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls say they do not know how they will be expected to take part in a national investigation in Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the highly anticipated investigation is expected to begin formal hearings in May.
A coalition of family members from Manitoba says it's still in the dark about travel costs and emotional support and other victim services, and it worries that the inquiry will not provide enough support or answers. Hilda Anderson-Pierce is the co-chair of the Manitoba Missing and Murdered Women and Girls Coalition. She says many families can't access information about the inquiry because they don't have access to the internet.
I'm pretty well-versed on the subject matter of the inquiry, like just learning about it and stuff like that. Not even the inquiry, but the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I feel myself that I'm in the dark about this inquiry, that there's very little information being provided.
Some of the questions being asked include how many communities the Inquiry Commission will visit, and will there be subsidies for travel costs, therapy for emotional supports for those who feel the trauma of retelling their stories, and will there be access to traditional First Nations ceremonies. The inquiry will look at the systemic causes of violence against Indigenous women and girls and why the rate of reported violence against them is three times that of non-Aboriginal women. Interim findings are expected in November, with a final report expected in December of next year. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Native American radio and diversity in media was mentioned during a U.S. House Appropriations budget hearing on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Tuesday in Washington. President Trump's budget proposes to eliminate CPB funding. Advocates of public broadcasting say rural stations and those who cannot afford paid subscriptions would be hit hard. CPB President Patricia Harrison told lawmakers public broadcasting costs each citizen about $1.35 per year. She urged lawmakers to keep the investment, saying it pays off in areas of education, public safety, and civic leadership. There are more than 50 Native radio stations and a handful of television stations and projects which serve Indian country. National Native News receives CPB funding. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting science, technology, and engineering careers through a partnership with the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. It's 6 minutes after the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and I'm here with our first guest, Stacy Joof. Stacy, could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi there. Like Shelley said, my name is Stacy, and I work for the Juneau School District as a special education support teacher, and I'm here today to talk about this district's integrated preschool program.
What does a preschooler's world look like?
Pretty awesome, I'd have to say. Preschoolers get to play a lot. They get to be super silly, sing lots of silly songs, and they're really just exploring their role in the world. They're learning how to be friends and just learning what they like and don't like as they wander through the world.
It's about 3 years old, 4 years
yep,
old?
Yep. To be in our preschools, you have to be 3 years old, and then after you turn five, you go off into kindergarten, so 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds.
So could you please tell us some more about what are integrated preschool opportunities?
Sure. So one of the reasons I'm here today is that we're looking for peers for our integrated preschools. And for those of you who aren't unfamiliar with our integrated preschool program, we have it at all six of our elementary schools. And we have an AM program and a PM program. And our preschool is designed for students who experience developmental delays or have disabilities. And also we have peer models. So the peer models are there to help with language and help to be good friends to their friends that have disabilities or delays. So they're helping them to learn how to play and learn how to communicate better. And so, so we're looking for peers to come and play at preschool.
So it's that sort of peer interaction element that differentiates it from regular preschools?
You got it. Exactly. So obviously there are teachers and paraeducators, but really a lot of the learning comes from their peers. So those interactions with their peers. Some of the students who experience delays or disabilities are not verbal yet, or they're just on the verge of talking. And so sometimes their friends, their preschool age friends, can help the adults sort of interpret what they're saying or help them learn language and just learn how to play and get along with others.
Oh, that sounds really innovative.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's great to be in preschool.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And about how many students are we talking about? Does this include?
So in our classrooms, like I mentioned, we have a morning session, which runs from 8 to 10:30 Tuesday through Friday, and we have afternoon sessions as well that run noon to 2:30. And in each session, there's anywhere from 11 up to 16 students. 16 is our cap, and I don't think we have any schools right now or any programs that are at 16 right now, but typically I'd say 8 to 12 students are in the preschool sessions, and there's a special education teacher in each of the classrooms, as well as 2 to 3 paraeducators. We also have speech-language pathologists, occupational therapists, and physical therapists who work in the classroom as well. So they're in there, not daily, but in there working with students who experience those delays, providing some therapies, and including those peers to help use them in a therapeutic setting in the preschool to help all their friends learn.
Could you maybe give us an example of some of the activities they do in these sessions?
Absolutely. So one of the things that all of the preschool sessions include is a free play session. So there might be a session where there's a sensory table full of water. They have like pretend fish and octopus, all those. So sea creatures that they play with. There might be a session or a section of the room where there's a big carpet that has train tracks on it, and there's trains, so kids are playing on the trains. There might be a reading section where they're doing some story time. There is almost always a kitchen section. All kids love to pretend to eat, funky foods and whatnot. And at those different stations, There are interactions between peers going on, and sometimes if the peers, the kids aren't getting along, an adult can step in and sort of facilitate the play and facilitate conversations between the kids. But that's one of the cornerstones of all of our programs, is that free play time for kids to, in center time, to have free will to go do what they want to do and play with some of their friends.
Aww. What a nice educational prospect for these preschoolers.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think that what's really neat is that if you were to walk into any of these classrooms, you wouldn't necessarily know what kids experience delays and what kids are the peers, because they're all just playing together and really learning from each other in just a way, you know, kids are so accepting and they don't really see differences. And so as an adult, you walk in there and you don't even necessarily know who's who, which is really nice. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. And then And what schools does this involve?
So we have preschool at all of our elementary schools, an AM and PM program. At Auk Bay, we only have a morning session for next year. Currently, we have a PM program, but next year we will just have an AM preschool out of Auk Bay. But at all the other five elementary schools, which are Gastineau, Harborview, Glacier Valley, River Bend, and Mendenhall River, all have two sessions a day.
Great. And this is a program that you have to apply to if you're a parent?
Yep, it sure is. And so applications are available online at junoschools.org. It's right there on the front page. They are due April 14th. And also at all of our elementary schools, the applications are available as well. So you can get it at junoschools.org or drop by your local boundary area school and pick up an application. And then there's directions in there. They're turned into the student Office of Student Services by April 14th.
Cool. Sounds like you made it pretty easy for folks.
Yep, we did. We try.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about this?
I'd just like to say that I encourage any parent who's looking to get their kid into a really great program, please do apply and come check out our preschools.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being here today,
right.
Stacy.
Thanks a lot, Shelley. It was great to be here.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 29th of March, 2017. It was on this day in 1973 the last U.S. combat troops left Vietnam. The number of troops had peaked in 1969 at about 500,000 soldiers. In January 1973, the United States, North and South Vietnam, and the Viet Cong signed a peace agreement in Paris, which ended the United States' direct involvement of the war, though the ceasefire did not hold and the war was back in full force by 1974. After the combat troops withdrew on this date in 1973, 7,000 civilian personnel remained in Saigon who were evacuated in 1975 when Saigon fell to the communists. It's the birthday of the politician and author Eugene McCarthy, born Watkins, Minnesota, on this day in 1916. It's the birthday of the poet R.S. Thomas, Cardiff, Wales, 1913, Anglican clergyman, Welsh nationalist, wrote his autobiography in Welsh, called it Neb, meaning nobody. It was on this day in 1944 that Anne Frank decided to rewrite her diary as an autobiography. She'd gotten this little red and white checkered diary as a present for her 13th birthday back in 1942. And a few weeks later, her sister Margaret got a notice to report for a forced labor camp by the Nazis, and the next day the family went into hiding. In March of 1944, Anne Frank and her family listened to a radio broadcast by the Dutch education minister in exile, urging ordinary Dutch citizens living under Nazi occupation to preserve documents for future generations. He said, "If our descendants are to understand fully what we as a nation have had to endure, then what we really need are ordinary documents, letters, a diary." And so Anne Frank went back through 2 years of diary entries, and she rewrote them. She gave members of her family pseudonyms. She edited for clarity and character development and background, and she decided that after the war she would write a memoir called Het Achterhuis, which means the house behind. She wrote, "I know that I can write. A couple of my stories are good. My descriptions of the secret annex are humorous. There's a lot in my diary that speaks. But whether I have real talent remains to be seen. In the spring and summer of 1944, she filled more than 300 pages of paper with her revised work. She was still working on it when the Nazis came in August of 1944 and took them away to concentration camps. Here's a poem for today by A.E. Houseman, number 13, from A Shropshire Lad. When I was 21, I heard a wise man say, "Give crowns and pounds and guineas, but not your heart away. Give pearls away and rubies, but keep your fancy free." But I was 21, no use to talk to me. When I was 21, I heard him say again, "The heart out of the bosom was never given in vain. 'Tis paid with sighs a plenty and sold for endless rue. And I am 22, and oh, 'tis true, 'tis true." Number 13, from A Shropshire Lad by A.E. Houseman, from the collected poems of A.E. Houseman, published by Henry Holt and Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Baby's unborn. saddled and bridled, so gallant rode he. Home came his good horse, but never came he. Home came his good horse, but never came he.
Spring member drive. But this year, KTOO is giving back the airwaves. We want to keep long fundraising moments out of the mix. You still get all the news and information you love from KTOO while we briefly remind you of the importance of your financial support. The largest single portion of KTOO's budget comes from individuals just like you who love the station and take pride in financially supporting it. Join with those who have already signed on this spring and help pay for the service you depend on. Just go to ktoo.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. We were just listening to some music here on Juno Afternoon. That last track was from the Murphy Beds. They're the guest artists for this year's Alaska Folk Festival that starts on Monday. And we're going to hear another song from a folk festival artist. This next one's from Dave Stancliffe from Toke. He'll be playing at the Folk Fest on day one, Monday.
I've been around all over, about every place that I know. I've been around down in Texas, the land of the Alamo. But there's one place that I'm going, I heard it on the radio. It's the home site up in Alaska, a land of the mountains and snow. I want 160 acres in the mountains way up there. A whole lot of hunting and fishing, and a whole lot of grizzly bear. Well, I'm telling you what I'm gonna do. Pack my bags and go to my home site up in Alaska, a land of the mountains and snow. Well, I'm tired of this rushing and running, working hard day and night, just trying to make a living. Boy, this way ain't a man's delight. When I see those big, pretty mountains up there, bathed in the northern lights, I know I'm closer to God's creation. Whoa, what a sight. I want 160 acres in the mountains way up there. A whole lot of hunting and a fishing, and a whole lot of grizzly bear. Well, I'm telling you what I'm gonna do. Pack my bags and go to my home site up in Alaska, a land of the mountains and snow. Mountains way up there. A whole lot of hunting and a fishing, and a whole lot of grizzly. grizzly bear. Well, I'm telling you what I'm gonna do. Pack my bags and go to my home site up in Alaska, a land of the mountains.
You're tuned in to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Quick correction. That was a song from Dave Stancliffe. He's from Toke, and he's going to be a guest on Juno Afternoon on Monday, April 3rd. I had mentioned he was playing at Folk Fest on Monday. What I meant to say was he will be a guest on our show. Thank you very much for listening.
This is Bird Note. We're hearing the sound of a male hummingbird. When naturalist A.R. Annans wrote, "Birds are flowers flying, and flowers are perched birds," he may have had hummingbirds in mind. Their eye-catching iridescence sparkles in the sun. One hummingbird commonly seen west of the Rockies is the rufous hummingbird. East of the Rockies, you'll see the ruby throat. The hummingbird is the only bird that can truly hover. It manages this by flapping its wings 20 to 80 times a second. It can fly straight up and down, backwards and forwards, or upside down, and up to 75 miles an hour. But don't worry, it won't run into you. This bird can slow down from 25 miles an hour to a dead stop in a space no longer than your index finger. And even if it did collide with something, it isn't likely to cause much damage. This mighty puffball weighs less than 2 dimes. Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for spring planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
Hi, I'm Jacob Resnick, a reporter at KTOO. But I'm not only a KTOO reporter, I'm also a dues-paying member. Why? Of all the news media in Juneau, there's only one locally owned source of news. That's KTOO. And at a time when many news outlets are struggling to make ends meet, listener support is the reason we've been able to expand the newsroom to cover the community like no one else. And we have the advantage of not having to appeal to a group of shareholders each quarter. Rather, you, the listener, and the Juneau community as a whole are our shareholders. Here's the pitch. We're appealing to you to support the programming you value with a voluntary contribution. That's the public radio model, and it's the reason KTOO continues to bring unrivaled, independent, intelligent, and balanced news. So, thank you if you've already contributed. You're the reason we're here. If you haven't given, or it's been a while since your last time donating, keep KTOO strong by giving now. It can all be done online at ktoo.org.
You're tuned into A Juno Afternoon. It's 29 minutes after the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, your host, and I'm here with my next guest, Colette Costa.
Hello, Shelley. Thank you for being here on this, your very first time hosting A Juno Afternoon. We're so proud of you.
Thank you so much.
I'm sitting up very, very properly.
Yes, you are.
Because we're on the radio, so I should sit up.
Exactly. Well, thanks for being here. Colette, you're here today to talk to us about Founders Weekend.
Yes.
What can you tell us about this event?
Everything. What do you want to know? Everything great, terrific. So I have the Gold Town Theater over behind City Hall, secretly hidden, as many of you may not know. And we were founded back in 97, 98 by, that would be 1997, by a wonderful gentleman named Lyle Hebert, who many people out there know. He's a great guy. He was born and raised here. His father opened and owned Lyle's Hardware, which was right downtown where the Ben Franklin was, the other building that was next to the Ben Franklin. He had that for years and years. And so Lyle grew up downtown, spent his whole life here. He went away to Hollywood after he went to college and then went to Hollywood to sort of work in the industry. He's very passionate about films and moved back after a fashion to he wanted to reconnect. Hollywood wasn't his thing. He's not a Hollywood kind of guy. And he came back and decided he wanted to make a movie. So he made a film called Gold Town, which we're named after, which is just a great little 35-minute docudrama about the founding of the city of Juneau and the history of the city of Juneau. So it's a great movie, and I think I think Lyle should have been playing it like every Saturday since the day he opened. He opened the theater originally just to play that movie and to play it for tourists, and he had this idea that, you know, it was going to be this tourist thing, and it didn't really work out. So instead he started showing art house films and independent films as sort of a way to offset the costs of his investment, basically. And that, of course, became the mainstay of the theater. So the film itself, Gold Town, the movie, is still shown. Every so often we get school groups that come in and bring in, I can't remember what grade they're in, but a couple, three times a year we get huge school groups that come in and get to watch the movie. And it's a pretty neat little tradition, I guess. But I would. Have you ever seen it, Jeff? Have you? You've seen it. You must have.
Jeff Brown.
I feel like
our
you're in it.
And engineer.
Jeff Brown's always. Jeff Brown's first of all. Jeff Brown's everywhere. So don't just because he's physically here doesn't mean he's also not everywhere else. But everyone should see it. It's a wonderful little 35-minute film. It's got recreations of historical events that happened here. He uses a lot of archival footage and photographs in it. He did the script himself. He shot it here. It's a really lovely little movie.
So that's one of the films that's showing,
right.
But there's going to be more than that, too.
For sure. So Lyle made a number of short films. He also made one feature-length film. And Founders Weekend, I kept calling it Founders Day because everyone says Founders Day, and then I thought, well, it's 3 days long. That's not going to work at all, grammatically speaking. So we changed it up, Founders Weekend. And we're going to feature a lot of his films. He made this great feature-length romantic dramedy movie. It's very difficult to qualify, called Little Red Book, and we did the premiere of it about five or six years ago, a while ago. And it's all locally cast and locally shot, and he wrote the script for it, and it's a very odd anti-love story. We'll be showing that one. He made a couple, he sort of specialized in short documentaries. He's got one called Henry's Story about a man who was sort of very much sort of the downtown, he was downtown caller back in the 70s, probably even the 60s, 70s, 80s. He lived downtown. He was a strange little man who carried a ukulele, and he was often drunk. But he was, you know, he was just this guy that everybody knew who was downtown.
And Lyle made a movie about him.
Yeah, and so what you also get to see are these great shots of Juneau in the 70s and 80s, though.
Oh, cool.
So there's a lot of it that's on Franklin in front, and you know, there's a lot that's shot in the bars, the Crystal Ballroom, the Red Dog, the Alaskan.
Wow.
And then there's this other. There's this other piece. It's just so crazy. And it was back in the 80s. Do you remember the Overnight Club, Jeff? It was run by Steve Hamilton or
Steve Nelson
and Charlie Payne. And basically,
yes,
it was
Jeff
sort of,
remembers, I think.
It was like Juno Wayne's World. So these guys were given like free airtime after 1 a.m. at KJUD, I think. Like basically the cable access show here. And they would show old movies and they would do, you know, little bits in between them talking about the movie, or one of the bits was going through, I think, the state office building and just like investigating people's desks and making up stories about them. Basically, they did whatever they wanted at 1 a.m. And it was sponsored, I think, either by one of the furniture companies. And so every week, this furniture company would get new furniture in, and that would be their set for the week. Was like, also, all this stuff's for free. This couch is really comfortable. And so they did this crazy show. And one of the episodes happened to be when Lyle came to Juneau for a visit from California. And so they did this whole like thing like Lyle, the early years. And it's, you know, they kind of treat him like he's this Hollywood star who's come back home. And so it's them walking through downtown Juneau, and they go to the cemetery and a couple other places, and they're talking about video shoots they did here. I remember we brought that crane out here. We had this idea. Yeah, we got a crane from what's his name. We were going to do this shot, and yeah, with the cemetery and the thing. And they both pause, and then one of them goes, that was a terrible idea. But again, it's like they're walking through, you know, they're walking down Front Street, and I think that was shot in 1983.
Wow.
And it's really wonderful. And then in between them talking, they actually show the movies that of which they're speaking. And among the things that that Lyle shot were early political ads. He shot some amazing local commercials for businesses that are no longer here. He shot some commercials and businesses. He had a couple other little short stories. So that's all integrated into the Lyle the early years. And it's just such a wonderful little postcard to Juno, you know. He also shot this little thing. It was for the centennial of the state. Centennial, I don't know, the numbers get all mixed up. Maybe it was a centennial. It was a picture postcard of Juno at the time, a snapshot of Juno, sort of a day in the life of. And it just walks through the town from sunrise to sunset doing snippets of, it's a non-narrative piece, but it just sort of shows bits and pieces of the city.
In the summer or the winter?
It's primarily summer. I can't remember if there's any snow stuff mixed in there. But it's just a good, almost experimental film that he did. And so we have this, it's a fairly complex schedule because there's lots of little films. Then he made that movie Crazy, which was about mentally ill and homeless people. And his quote was that the movie isn't called Crazy because it's about people who are mentally ill. It's called Crazy because of the way we treat these people and the way they're handled by the system.
I see.
Yeah. So we have that one. And the schedule's all up on our website, goldtownnick.com.
Yep.
And
it sounds like it's going to be wonderful for both long-timers and also,
for
you
sure,
know, folks like me and others who are, you know, relatively new to town and want to know what it was like.
Oh, and it's just great shot. There's this very small but rich history of local filmmakers, and we don't have a lot of them. We're not California, but Lyle was definitely carrying on a tradition that someone like Chuck Keane had sort of promulgated back in the 50s and 60s, and he was a filmmaker who founded the Alaska Picture Company, and he made a number of feature-length films and with definitely local color, and he very much influenced Lyle. And, you know, Lyle coming back and making his own films here was a part of that. And the guys who have Alaska Robotics and the Lucid Reverie, those guys, they're definitely very much influenced by both of those men and, you know, are currently making a number of films here in town. So it's just nice to see that perpetuated. I believe in being in touch with the past, particularly when it still pertains to the present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even these films like Henry's Story that he made back in the late 70s are, I think they're still very, very much a part of the community that we have today.
So Lyle passed away in October. Would you kind of describe this as a tribute, this event?
Yeah, for sure. And sort of, you know, the downside is I had this idea to do this sort of Lyle thing, because Lyle had ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. He had had it for, I think he was diagnosed 2 years before he passed away. And, I had this idea like, oh, we've got to do this Lyle tribute. And at the time he was still working on two movies. And so he finished one of them, which is called, Uyarak, which is a short film based on an essay written by a man who negligently murdered his son. And this man wrote an essay while he was in prison about the history of his people. And so Lyle took that essay and turned it into a docudrama, much like he did with Gold Town. And we had the big premiere of that film at Gold Town when he was here. I think that was maybe in January. Don't quote me on that.
That sounds right.
And it was a wonderful evening, and he came down, and that was sort of that was the last time he was at the theater. And so after that point, it was just too difficult for him to get down to the theater. So I put it off just long enough, but his wife Claire has greenlit the whole thing, and I thank her and Gabby very much for allowing me to do this and for helping me out.
Will this become an annual event?
Possibly. I would like to feature. I would like to have a more regular feature of Alaskan films somehow.
Sure.
You know, we have the Jump Society. We do that twice a year.
One of my favorite things to come to.
Yep. That's all local filmmakers. I would like to do something that's a little more, I'm saying to use the word professional, but something that's a little more polished and that's a proper feature film and do
right,
that every so
right,
often.
Right.
Problem is we just don't make a lot of good films here. We're going to dig a couple out. We're going to find some.
Okay,
but
cool.
I strongly encourage, I just would love for a lot of people to come out and see Gold Town and just figure out why the heck we're called that. We didn't just make it up.
It's the origin story. Okay, so give us the details again.
So it's the whole weekend is Thursday through Sunday. The only other extra detail was part of the launch is we're also launching this new classic cinema collective, is what we're calling it. Lyle was a hugely enamored of classic films, and he was a proponent of them. He did a classic film series early on when he had the theater, and so we're sort of coming back we're closing the circle on that, and we are playing, it's one of his favorite films, which was Sunset Boulevard. It was one of the first films, classic films, he played. So we're launching this classic cinema club in honor of Lyle, and so that is our Thursday show. We're going to play Gold Town right before it at, I think, 6:30, and then into Sunset Boulevard at 7. It's a beautiful, beautiful film, 1954. Billy Wilder stars Gloria Swanson. It's a terrific movie. Friday is Lyle All Day. We have Little Red Book in there. Saturday is primarily that. We do have a couple other local events. Because the other part of it was local. Lyle was very community-oriented. He was a counselor for a very long time. He was very concerned about this town. So we have we're doing a great fundraiser for the Juno Cooperative Preschool on Saturday at 11 a.m. and I think 4:30 p.m. We're doing, it's part of our Not So Silent Festival. So it's Not So Silent Shorts, and it's just a bunch of short films. It's primarily for kids. Adults can come if they want. You're not going to get kicked out. It's not going to look weird. It's primarily for kids, and it's a bunch of silly short films with all local musicians. There's about 15 or 20 different machinations of musicians, and it's just going to be a complete cluster, but totally fun.
And Sunday?
And then Sunday, just more Little Red Book, more Gold Town, and It's as confusing as I could possibly make it. Basically.
But you can go on the website and find out more information. Is there costs associated with some of these?
Like, I think I'm just going to put a big donation thing out, and we're going to do a big donation for ALS. I'm going to talk to Claire and find out if there's some other entity or group that she would like us to donate to. But that's what we'll do.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for all that wonderful information. I love your zipper pull. I don't know where you got that.
Have you seen this? I don't know if you guys are aware of this drive that they're doing on the station now where they're not interrupting awesome shows to go 586-303-3636.
No, we're not doing any of that.
You're not doing that at all.
No.
But if you did want to fund public radio, which is so in need of money, you should go online. And
go online, kto.org, and you can get a cool zipper pool like that or any number of other things.
Boom.
Yep.
Drop it on that one. I just got a little advertising in there.
Thanks for being here, Colette.
Thanks
and
a lot.
I think you'll be back tomorrow.
I think you're doing a tremendous job, by the way.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is the University of Alaska Southeast. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17yok@junopolice.com. Together, we make Juno a better place to live.
Okay, folks, it's time to talk about our spring fun drive. Hold on. Do not switch the station. Stay with me. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. It's time to give. This is the fundraiser. The short message. Go to KTOO.org right now and give so that you can continue to enjoy so much great information from KTOO every day. Thanks to our sustaining members and to those who have already renewed this spring, we are well on our way to hitting the membership goal. Give now at KTOO.org.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It is about 15 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and I'm here with my next guest. We've got Chris Giannotti and Eric and Nolan, and they're part of the Boy Scouts here to talk about the food drive. What can you guys tell us about this event?
Well, we basically go out on a Saturday morning, and for about an hour and a half, we go and drop off plastic grocery bags on people's doorknobs, and then the next week, we go and pick them up, and hopefully they are full of canned goods and like oatmeal and cereal and like pasta and basically just anything that's non-perishable.
Okay. I've been handed a little slip of paper. Are these the instructions for when you receive an empty plastic bag?
Yeah.
That'll be on the bag.
It'll be on the bag.
Yeah, there'll be a... So the coming week, different Scouts and Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts will drop those off throughout the city, and we'll pick them up on April 8th and drop them off at the food bank.
Wonderful. And is this all over the city, downtown, Valley, Douglas?
Yeah, it should be.
Wow. How long is that going to take you guys?
Well, we're Troop 6, and we do like the airport, Valley area, kind of, and then the other troops do different areas, and we each have a specific area that we do on regular every year.
Very interesting. So what do you guys like best about scouting?
I think it's great that we get to learn about being in the outdoors and doing good things for other people, and being able, having the opportunities to be able to do that stuff.
And what have you learned from being a Boy Scout? You can both give me your answers.
I've learned just so many like different outdoor skills that I may not have learned if I wasn't in scouting.
And I think I've learned a lot about like service and public service projects and stuff like that has really helped.
Does your troop go camping a lot?
Yes.
Our troop goes camping usually once a month, and we try to get in like at least one kind of high adventure trip a year. Last weekend, we went up to White Pass in between Skagway and Whitehorse, and we dug snow caves and spent two nights in them, and it was negative 10 degrees one morning, so it was a really cold camp out, but it was really fun. This summer, a group of guys are headed down to West Virginia to go to the National Boy Scout Jamboree on the Summit Metro Reserve. And then hopefully in 2018, our troop is going to be able to go to the Philmont Scout Ranch, which is near Cimarron, New Mexico. So we have plenty of big trips planned.
Wow. I actually wasn't expecting an answer like that. I thought you guys just kind of camped out around Juneau. And do you do any of that as well?
Yeah, we do camps at, like, Dan Moeller and John Muir and, like, just at, like, the Eagle Beach Campground. And we've gone to, like, Windfall, Cowie Creek.
Or, like, an island or something, a small island. We'll go sleep in tents and stuff out there.
Oh, mm-hmm. Do you guys paddle out?
We usually take... The last time we've gone to an island, we went out to Sweddle Island, which is just out in Auk Bay, and we just took a couple of boats across and anchored them up out in front of the island and camped out there.
Wow, that's impressive.
And you guys went down the Yukon last summer? Or
yeah,
last
summer we went down 225 miles of the Yukon River for 12 nights, and we did... Each boy did around 10 hours of service, and we had, I think, 12 people, so probably about 120 man-hours of service on the camping trip. And then 2 years before that camp out, another group a group of guys before us went, and they built a bridge in between two campgrounds separated by a little creek. And when we came back 2 years later, it was still standing, which was pretty cool.
What great experiences. Now I kind of wish I could be a Boy Scout. So apart from the camping and the hiking, do you guys have favorite trails that you like to do here around Juneau?
Juneau has such a, like, a wide variety of places to hike. Just all the trails are really cool trails to hike.
And going back to what you said about doing 10 hours of service when you were on the Yukon, what kind of service were you doing?
Well, like I said earlier, we like built that bridge a couple years or 4 years ago, I guess. And then we've built
So that bridge was for the community,
for
the public?
For like people, other people who camped there that can use it to get across the campground or across the creek. We also have built like tables. We've gotten like white ash logs, and we split them down the center so they're about 2 feet long. And then we lashed together kind of a platform, and then set the flat sides of the birch logs or whatever said logs up, and then we kind of nailed them into the platform and created some tables and stuff.
Oh, did you guys have that plan the whole time, or did you get it when you got there?
We've done that in the past, but this year we tried something new. We had like a handheld drill, like 100-year-old drill that we used to hand drill holes, and then we created dowels out of smaller trees and like pounded those through to hold it together. So it was like either rope or wooden dowels to hold together. There's barely any nails in any of our projects.
Oh, how interesting. And how many of you worked on that?
We built probably four along the entire river, and every guy gave a little bit to each table. And we also built a sawhorse for cutting firewood, and we stacked tons of firewood all over at the campouts and stuff, or the campground and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. What wonderful acts of service. I know if I'd been camping there, I'd really appreciate that. So you guys looking forward to summer?
Yeah.
Great. And then what's the next trip that you guys are doing?
This summer we're going to West Virginia for the National Jamboree.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. And so, again, the food drive starts Saturday, April 8th.
That's when picking up.
So dropping off this Saturday.
This Saturday, yeah.
Picking up April 8th. And is there anything I missed that you'd like to tell us about?
I don't think so.
No? Got it all? Okay, great. Well, good luck with that. I hope I get one on my door.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Hi, my name is Shelley Delaney, and I love radio. I've loved radio ever since I was a little kid, and everywhere I've ever lived, I've made it my mission to find the coolest radio station in town and to listen to it as much as possible. When I moved to Juneau a couple years ago, I discovered KTOO and KXLL and KRNN pretty much right off the ferry, and I've been a supporter ever since. I even have my own show on KXLL now. So if you're new to Juneau, you need a few things. A pair of extra tufts, a used Subaru, shelter dog, KTOO membership. Join today at ktoo.org. for listening. That wraps up a Juno Afternoon on today, Wednesday. And tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, Joan Pardis hosts, will meet some bilingual students from UAS, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Weather for the rest of today, numerous rain and snow showers, little or no snow accumulation, lows in the mid-30s, and tomorrow scattered rain and snow, highs in the mid-40s. Jeff Brown is our producer, and thank you also, Jeff, for engineering today. And we will be back tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele, the host of A Prairie Home Companion. Won't you join me each weekend as we celebrate the magic of radio? It's perfect for watching the glaciers move, and I suspect you'll have a capital time. Tune in every Saturday afternoon at 4 on KTOO News, Juno, and repeated Sunday mornings at 11 on KRNN-FM.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.